As I've had occasion to mention before, I have for most of my life, and to this day, been a devoted, even passionate reader of detective mystery novels, spy novels. It's one of the reasons why I am so excited that this Tuesday night, one of the world's great spy novelists, one of the best-selling spy novelists, Daniel Silva, whose hero is an Israeli Mossad agent and whose books always hit the top of the New York Times bestseller list, will be here to introduce his new book. But every now and then, when I'm reading one of these books, or for that matter, watching some variant of Law and Order, of which there are thousands, even when they're called something else, when I'm watching them on television, all of a sudden it strikes me that there I am, completely caught up in the story, very upset about whatever bad thing happened, and wishing passionately that whoever the malefactor is gets caught. And yet, this is all invented. Why is it that I can't help but get involved, even though I know that, for example, when I'm sitting at a play and the guy gets shot on stage, that as soon as the curtain closes, he's going to get up, walk off, and prepare for tomorrow night's show? And yet I am unable, as much as I may know that, to distance myself from my own reactions. That's a very peculiar thing if you think about it. I could tell you a story right now about somebody that we both agreed never existed. And if the story was skillfully enough told, you would get as involved in it as if I told you the story of somebody whom we knew actually lived. And that doesn't seem to make sense. But in fact, neuroscientists have something of an explanation, which is that all of us have inside of us, in our brains, what are popularly called mirror neurons. And mirror neurons are neurons that imitate what goes on in the world. Why is it that you feel sad when you see someone else crying? Because we now know the same neurons that fire when you are sad and crying fire in your brain when you see someone else sad and crying. It is the neurological basis of empathy. Why do we feel for other people? Because what goes on inside of us is actually the same, though on a lower level, as when we feel that emotion ourselves. So when you see it on stage, or read it in a book, or see it on television, you're actually undergoing the same experience as if it happened to you, even though obviously you're sitting on your couch and it's not happening to you. But in a real sense, it is. And I bring this up because that is part of what art does for us and what storytelling does for us, is it enables us to experience and therefore to understand the way human beings work. And so I want to return you through storytelling, through the Torah, to the way human beings work. Because despite the fact that we are told this again and again, and we see it again and again, we forget again and again. The first thing that happens, the moment that human beings leave the Garden of Eden, is a murder. Cain kills Abel. And when you read that, you're supposed to understand that human beings have within them this eternal, unending, difficult struggle between darkness and light. And yet, even though we know it, even though we feel it, when we are confronted by the radical nature of human evil, when someone explodes a bomb in Bulgaria in order to kill civilians. When someone walks into a movie theater in Aurora in order to kill innocent people, including a three-month-old baby, we say, how could a person do this? And yet, the irony that is almost too painful to be expressed is that those people went to see a movie that is all about darkness and crime, all about evil, all about attempts at murder and attempts to stop the darkness that is in human beings, and were themselves victims of that darkness, and then the nation is shocked again, forgetting that in the past several years, we have seen this many times. We saw it on an army base. We saw it at a school. We saw it at a political rally. Again and again and again, people, given the means, don't need the motive. And when we say this is obviously a sick, deranged person, we're forgetting the central lesson of the Torah, which is that all human beings have within them all sorts of capacities. And evil is in us all the time. And there is a reason why repeatedly, when you do experiments, when psychologists like Zimbardo and Milgram do psychological experiments where they put people in positions of power, we see that people, normal people, good people, kind people, everyday people, behave in very disturbing ways. Ironically or not, this was actually the subject of the sermon last week. This was exactly what I talked about. And yet, I felt like you couldn't stand up on the pulpit this week and not speak about it, more than about the sympathy that we feel for the tragic loss, not only of those who were killed and those who were bereaved of members of their family, but those who were injured, and those even who were sitting there who were not injured, who will have a lifelong trauma, because it is impossible to imagine what that experience must have been, even if you were fortunate enough to escape. But it is not enough to express sympathy without drawing again the lesson that the veneer, that is the covering of civilization, is very thin, and it cracks in an instant. And the reason that the Torah is so rigorous in making demands of human beings over and over and over again, the reason that there is a confessional in every morning service, not only on Yom Kippur, but in every morning service, is because that is a part of us. And if you put in people's hands the means to do harm to other people, you ought not to be surprised when some of them will do it. It doesn't matter. I mean, it may matter. But ultimately, it doesn't matter if you put more guards at movie theaters. First of all, a guard may or may not have stopped someone from coming in. And second, you have to put guards everywhere, not just at movie theaters. You know what this is if you go to Israel, where you get checked at every mall and every theater and every public event, because there is a systematic attempt to do evil to innocent human beings. But it's not only about social norms. It's about the human heart. And that's where, honestly, religion has something to teach to a society that seems not to understand that this is not just some wild, deranged, one-off event, but that over and over and over again, every day, in ways large and small, human beings do violence and cruelty to one another. And that unless we acknowledge and accept that fact, there is no fighting against it. As long as we believe we're always good and we're always kind, and then occasionally somebody does something that's crazy and evil, we won't even see the darkness in ourselves. I assure you, if I say to you, think of the time that someone was cruel to you, you can think of a time. But you see, that's not the religious exercise. The religious exercise is, think of a time you were cruel to someone. That's what the tradition asks you to do. Not to distance yourself from evil by saying, oh my God, this terrible, awful thing that this person did, I can't imagine how anyone could do that, but rather to use every example of cruelty as an opportunity to explore inside yourself. We're in the 9 days before Tisha B'Av, the destruction of the temple. And remarkably enough, the burden of the tradition is not, look at what those terrible people did, they burned down our temple. No, overwhelmingly the tradition is, what did we do? Why would God choose to have our temple burned down? We must have done something wrong. In other words, all reaction to evil begins with self-examination, not with easy condemnation, although obviously condemnation must happen. But that's easy. There isn't a decent human being in the world that doesn't look at that event and think, oh my God, what an act of evil and how terrible that is. But if it stops there, that's not a religious reaction. If you look at Bulgaria and only mourn and only condemn and never ask yourself, what's my conduct in the world? Then, frankly, you've missed the Jewish piece, which is not only about saying those people are terrible, but about wondering about yourself, exploring and examining yourself, realizing that all sorts of small, negligible, overlooked cruelties occur among us all the time. That we're not called to be perfect, but we are called to be kind. That when we sit together on Tisha B'Av and we act like mourners, that mourning is always an opportunity for examination about one's own life. That's in part why you sit Shiva. My teacher, Gordon Tucker, told me a remarkable thing about when his parent died and he sat Shiva. He said, for a week I decided I wasn't going to call the office. I wasn't going to hear anything that went on at work. I was just going to sit Shiva. And at the end of the week, the first thing I did was pick up the phone and check things at the office, and they were fine. And I realized that Shiva also prepares you for a time when you won't be there. You withdraw from the world, and you discover when you're done withdrawing that the world got along just fine without you. And so you have to decide, what can you do in the time that you have left to make a real contribution so the world will know in a positive way that you were there? Over the next days, weeks, months, you will hear endlessly about the life of this evil young man, about forces, about policies, about programs, about what people should do, what they won't do, about how it affects the box office, all sorts of things. But remember, if it doesn't change the way you look at yourself or live your life, it means nothing. Vain is the word of the philosopher, said Epictetus, that does not ease human suffering. If this doesn't in some way help us to be better, then in a very real sense, the tragedy was completely in vain. Part of the debt that we owe to people who suffer is not only to seek to alleviate their suffering, but for their suffering to educate us, to make us better, more compassionate, more understanding, to try to figure out what it is that will enable us to make society a little bit safer, a little bit better. You can't put a lock and a key on the human heart. People will always do terrible things. But you can't put a lock and a key on the human heart. People will always do wonderful things, compassionate things, healing things, godly things. If the former, the evil, increases the sum of the latter, the good, then we will be a little bit closer to what God intends. So we remember, we grieve, we feel shocked, and we feel sad. But as Jews, we also have to be a little bit better than we were before, both inside ourselves, in our understanding of our souls, and also in our compassion to those who need us. After all, that is exactly what the Torah is about. Yes, our journey in this world begins in a murder, but it ends in the Holy Land, in an attempt to build a society and a world as God wishes, and as we seek. Shabbat Shalom.